y'all. Pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel you can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we're going to ask what the hell happened versus Baylor and Oklahoma. What is this team missing, and where does this put Texas now, including where is Shaka Smart in the grand scheme of things in this Texas program? Then get on to next week's two games against Kansas State and Oklahoma State, which should be two of the easier teams they play in the Big 12, which now means they're going to lose to them. So let's go ahead and get right into this. Y'all, that was frustrating. Yeah.
It was a tough, tough look.
I mean,
it was just like that burger I had to this today was just, you know, it cost a lot. And it came out cold. The fries were a little soggy. And I just, it was frustrating that I had to pay that much. And, it just wasn't a good burger.
This sounds like something for pretend you're getting to know us.
Is that not what we're doing?
We do that at the end, my guy.
Oh, was there something else that happened?
No, I don't know. Look, honestly, it's all I could do not to bring an entire tequila bottle into here before we started. So
what the fuck? I thought we were... okay, fine.
That Tim already had his.
Yeah.
We told him to put it away.
That's... I just felt like a whole bottle was excessive. I mean, you know, if they lose to Kansas State, then we're all just going to take turns taking shots while we make various statements. That's basically it.
Well, you were wrong.
And then we're going to convert to a monthly podcast format so that we don't have to talk about this team so goddamn much.
If they lose to Kansas State, the next show is every pause, you take a shot.
Oh, boy. Every time Tim says, we'll all take a shot.
Take a shot. Yeah. Take a shot. We're dead by the end of the show. Yeah. But, yeah, let's go. I guess we'll talk about it. What the hell happened against Baylor and Oklahoma? I mean, Texas just looked physically outmatched against Baylor and mentally outmatched against Oklahoma. Why? Tim, why?
I don't know why. I think I kind of know what.
Is there a how?
Against Baylor, I just think that we...
What about when? Is there a when in this? All the time.
Every single moment. All right, so it was two things to me. Against Baylor, we looked like we were forcing things on offense. We looked like a team that just... defensively was pretty dialed in. Honestly, I thought we looked very good. I don't think anyone could look at that Baylor game and not feel kind of weirdly confident about our defense until you watch the Oklahoma game. But it was a game where offensively I think we shot like something like 13% from the floor in the second half against Baylor, which was the funny part was like they shot like 24% from the floor. I don't know. It was really bad. We got offensive out rebounded. We got outshot. We shot really poorly from the free throw line. Febris and Jones and Ramey picked a bad night to be ass. Baylor was just better. They just seemed better. Against Oklahoma, there was a little bit of a different vibe to it. When Doolittle banks in that three, I think was that in the first half? I think it was in the first half. If it was the second, it was early in the second. But when he banks in that...
I thought it was the second half.
Okay.
It might have been early.
When he banks in that three, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Just kind of could feel it coming. And Febris had two or three threes that just kind of like rimmed out. And Hepa had a three that rimmed out. And Ramey missed... Stop if you've heard this before. He missed another couple of layups. And... it's true. And it just kind of like, it's sort of like one of those nights where like, they really think they can beat us and they're going to be kind of ready to play. So I don't know. I thought Baylor just looked like we were on the road against a team that was better than us.
Hey, Oklahoma. What do you think about that coach from Arizona?
Oklahoma.
How well do you think you can outrun the NCAA?
Okay. Continue, Tim. Sorry.
No, you're good. You were right to stop me. So, I don't know. It just was
so, all right. Well, if we're talking about the Baylor game, let's start with the Baylor game. On defense, Texas played good enough defense to beat Baylor. Like, the defensive end was not the issue. They forced Baylor into tough shots. They limited their scoring. Like, they had him under 1 point per possession, which is a good mark for a team like Texas to try and reach. What foiled Texas in Waco is, and I guess what frustrates me most about the Baylor game is that there were stretches where Texas offense executed well enough to get them the shot they wanted, and they flat missed it. Like, there were a couple different layup opportunities for Ramey where he was wide fucking open.
And Jace and Matt.
Yeah, and he bricked it off the front of the rim. There were a couple wide open threes for Jace that, I mean, legitimately, if you take a guy like Jace and in isolation you say, if you can get him a three where he is standing still, his feet are set, there's nobody within 10 feet of him, how often is he going to hit those? Probably 50%, right? He had a couple of those. He missed them both, right? So the offense, while it was obviously not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, it felt like one of those, the execution was there in moments where it could have turned things to make it a lot more competitive. Like, there was, what was it, like 40-34, where Jace gets a wide open three and he misses it, and Baylor takes it the other way, hits a two. And so instead of it being 40-37, it's 42-34. And in a game where points are at such a premium, that's a big issue. The other part, like Tim mentioned, was the free throws. A team that is not great at free throws, but guys who you would expect to hit more of them than did, you know, that's another thing. Like, if you're going to take out a top 10 team on the road, there's a ton of little things that you have to do right to keep that window of opportunity open. And they didn't do it, whether it was the missed free throws or not completing a well-executed play or that sort of stuff. So that's, like, with Baylor, there's that. With Oklahoma, you know, the first 10 minutes looked good on the offensive end. Like, they were aggressive. They were playing hard. They were making good cuts. Like, they were getting the ball to Jericho down the low post. There was, you know, there's a lot of good stuff happening there. And then Lon Kruger adjusted like the fucking Borg. And suddenly it's like, oh, look, Andrew Jones is on Brady Manick down in the low post. Don't think this is going to end well. Or
how does that keep on happening?
I mean, you know,
they switch on and off guys, and they just create mismatches for themselves every single game.
Yeah, I think with Oklahoma, that there are two guys who are sort of unique talents in their way, right? Like, there's Brady Manick, who is, he's the stretch four that Texas really could use right now, right? But he also can play in the low block. And so he's difficult for Texas's fours to guard, right? Because if Manick goes up against Hepa in the low post, that's a bucket. But he gets Liddell on him, maybe it's a better defensive play, but then Liddell can't fucking shoot for shit on the offensive end, so that's not really a net win. The other is Christian Doolittle, who Sims defended him about as well as you can reasonably expect. Other guys got on him and tried, but Doolittle was hitting, like, he had a step back three with Sims in his face. And if Sims is going to contest a three, like a decent contest on a step back three, and Doolittle still hits it, like, you got to tip your hat to Doolittle. He was on that night. And I don't know what outside of like a Nancy Kerrigan sort of knee contusion could have stopped Doolittle from doing what he did. So, what Texas got away from in Oklahoma on the offensive end is they stopped feeding Jericho. Anytime Matt Coleman wasn't in the game, they weren't getting the ball in the paint reliably. They weren't finishing at the rim reliably. They weren't playing that sort of two-man inside-outside game with Jericho reliably. I mean, sort of the overriding theme of the last couple games is unless Matt and Jericho manage to play 40 good minutes a night, this team's in trouble.
What about the coach at Penn State? What is he like? I feel like that would be a good, that sounds good to me. I mean, number 20 in the nation, 12-2. That sounds
good. Take a look at his career record, my dude. His year, this is year five. His year five was worse than Shaka's, for whatever that's worth at Penn State. So,
yeah, he's now in what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's in year 8 and has made 0 tournaments.
So never mind. What about that dude at Colorado? That looks good.
Tad Boyle.
Yeah, Tad Boyle is good. Like I'm not gonna. Yeah, I got no arguments with Tad
okay.
Boyle.
All right, Colorado got it. Tim, anything on Oklahoma? I'm at Lon Kruger. How do you think he would fit at Texas?
I would murder a hobo for Lon Kruger at this point, honestly. Like he has brought what, 5 different teams to the tournament. He's been to at least one Final Four, not multiple Final Fours, if I remember right.
He took Florida to the Final Four in like 93 or 92 or 95.
Yeah, that's right. And then he did Oklahoma, where they lost by 44 points, because I'm always going to remember that and mention it. Yeah, no, if Oklahoma wants to, like, you know, do a trade where we give up a first rounder or something, fucking do it, right? Like, you guys take Shaka, see what you can do with that. Like, he'll have Christian Doolittle hit it.
We'll give you our first round pick.
Yeah. We'll trade Royce Hamm, James Banks, and Jacob Young for Lon Kruger.
I will trade Royce Hamm right now for a ham sandwich.
But Tim, what do you think? What went wrong against Oklahoma besides everything?
I just it was an example. I think Johnny hit it on the head. We just, if it's not Matt with the ball playing some type of pick and roll with Jericho, we're shit. We are just not good. So I think that before the season started, if you had asked any Texas basketball fan, they would have said our backcourt was our strength. And if you look at how in the 4 losses that we've had, Jace, Andrew, and Courtney have been bad. Just bad. And that was for sure the case against Oklahoma. You know, they shot poorly. They had too many turnovers. They didn't play make. It sort of feels like, When Matt's not in the game, I think we need to manufacture some ways to allow Courtney and Gerald and Andrew to be playmakers that doesn't simply involve, hey, create something off the bounce for yourself or make something happen. I'd love to see some baseline sweeps from our corner three-point guys, right? There's no reason that when we're running our initial ball screen action that we can't get something going towards the basket away from the ball, but we don't, you know. Or if Matt's not on the ball, there's no reason we can't run backdoor cuts from the other side or run some flex screens on the opposite side. We don't do that.
Give and go or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason that we can't, like, you know, that we can't send more than one guy after offensive rebounds if we're struggling to score. Like, fucking get in there. But we don't, you know. We just simply don't. And so when you look at that game, it became pretty obvious, as we were talking about before, Oklahoma's going to hit some shots. Like, they hit some tough shots. Like, the shot at the end of the half by, was it Reeves or whatever? Yeah. Manic hit some shots. Obviously, Doolittle, as Johnny said, you know, came to play. And, you know, good for them. That's awesome. Like you said, tip your hat. But if we know we got to score, then and what our initial action, because the big thing that happened is Sims came out early and played well, and then Oklahoma was blowing up the ball screens by bringing two defenders to Sims. So, like, the reason that we were struggling with him is, like, we had a hard time finding post entries from that high post because Oklahoma found two defenders for him and was helping onto him even a little bit, like, shading from that third defender on the strong side. And so we couldn't find him. And we never adjusted. We never adjusted with anything. We didn't adjust with off-the-ball movement. We didn't adjust with baseline sweeps. We didn't adjust with whatever. And it just got worse and worse. And I'm sure Oklahoma was like, if they're not going to fucking adjust, let's go. Great. Thanks for not adjusting. And you saw a 9-point lead turn into a 10-point loss.
Yeah, and I think part of that, like, Coleman is the only guard who reliably feeds the post. who can reliably feed the post. I realize it's not going to be something that happens all the time, right? Although it's happening more and more as the season goes on.
He just seems smarter. I hate he is, like, that. Just seems
he's more decisive.
Like a douche thing to say to Matt and Courtney, but he just seems smarter than them. Like don't forget this shit. Don't get yourself into terrible situations all the time. But they just do, and he just doesn't seem to as much.
There is a decisiveness and a speed that Matt operates at that none of the other guards can match. Like, they're not even close, frankly. Like, you watch Matt, and even when he is at the top of the key pounding the ball into the court, he is doing it with purpose. Like, you watch Ramey and Andrew and some of the other guys, like, they dribble. Like, they're sort of starting to set stuff up. Matt is, like, on a mission.
Yeah.
And it's so Matt, frustrating
it's patience.
Because
with Courtney and Andrew, it's like, if I wait long enough, like, maybe something will happen.
Yeah, I think we're going to get this set up. And Matt's like, fucking, why are we not there 3 seconds ago? Like, you know, I mean, you watch Matt turn down screens because he knows exactly where he wants the screen to be, or he sets up a screen on the opposite side and then goes straight baseline or whatever, right? Like, he does a series of things that, and he does them at a speed that none of the other guards can do. And they don't, it's not, I mean, I don't want to say they're not interested. They're just not capable at this point. And maybe, you know, maybe Courtney a season or two from now is that guy, but he's not him now. And I don't know that Andrew Jones is ever going to be that guy, because he's too loose with his dribble. He's too loose with the ways he attacks the rim. Instead of being like a straight line or a hard cut, it's sort of this rounded edge. And it's just sort of like you need to, like, you watch Matt, he's basically like just digging lines into the hardwood, where it's like you could measure with a protractor. Whereas Andrew's like, I'm going to take this sort of parabola and then I'm going to end up in the paint, and maybe someone steals it, maybe they don't. And if they don't, then maybe I'll shoot it from the free throw line. Like, it's just, it's not the same. And the gap between Matt and the other guards is a significant source of pain for this team.
I think Texas was expecting Courtney Ramey to be better than what he is this year.
Yep.
And that is a lot of the problem that this team is facing, is the fact that they don't have that secondary ball handler. And as soon as either Sims or Coleman steps off the floor, they don't have a big man presence down low, which is why they are getting bullied by Baylor. And they don't have a ball handler up top after Coleman, which is why they, you know, the 4-minute stretch where Texas just absolutely gave the game away to Oklahoma, that's why that happened.
Yeah, and I think, like, here's the thing. We all love Andrew's story. I think he is a really solid, you know, young man who... he has battled back from some incredible odds to, like, just the fact that he's on the court is amazing, medically, you know, emotionally, however you want to talk about it. But he was bad last night, and
truly bad.
I got admonished by somebody because they on Twitter, because they said I was that they still found him to be an inspiration. And I'm like, it doesn't mean he can't suck. Like, it's fine. Like, it's, we're all inspired by his battle, but he was terrible. if Ramey is going to be as sort of, if he's going to struggle as a primary ball handler in the way that he has, then Texas is in deep shit, right? Because if really, like, the strength of this theoretical offense is based on guards who can initiate the offense, who can run the offense, who can bail the team out if need be, who work both expediently and decisively, and only one of those two guys is doing that right now. And it's not reasonable to ask Andrew Jones to come back in immediately and be the primary or the secondary ball handler in this thing. So, like, it's a problem. There's no other way around it. It's a serious problem.
Exacerbated by the fact that we're not changing. Like, I don't see how the staff has purposely otherwise like added wrinkles to what we're doing. Like, we're 14 games in, and I don't think that, like, well, okay, yeah, what do you think?
I mean, look, these are minor wrinkles, right? Like, it's not a wholesale thing, but, like, you saw Jace actually attack the rim a little bit, where instead of taking one dribble to the side and taking the three, he actually got in the paint. Right.
Well, I get what Tim's saying. There's nothing major that's going to happen here. You're not changing your offense or your defense or your general philosophy more than halfway through the season.
Sure,
but on a different note, what do y'all think of that coach from Dayton?
The guy that got fired from Alabama?
No, that sounds good. I don't know. I mean, hey, they're right now they're number 15 in the nation, 13-2.
Can we get Obi Toppin? Can he come with Grant? That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, bring Obi Toppin. We'll do it.
Can he coach the team?
I don't care if he can coach.
I don't know. I don't know who's coaching. I just know they're doing well. So, I guess also, where does this put Texas in this season after losing to Oklahoma on the home court, after getting whooped by Baylor, which was expected? Where does this put Texas?
So, I said this on the radio, but basically, I have the Big 12 in five tiers now. I have Kansas at the top. They are still on their own tier. Baylor and West Virginia are in the next tier below them, trying to make it to that first tier. I'm putting Tech alone in the third tier. I don't know whether they're closer to the second or the fourth tier, but they've separated themselves from the people below them. And then that fourth tier is basically everybody except Kansas State. It's Texas, Iowa State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and TCU. And so if Texas has any designs on getting to the tournament, they really need to get at least 8, if not 9 wins in conference play, which is, at this point, it feels like a pretty remote opportunity, but let's just say for the sake of argument, they're trying to build their path forward. What they need to do is stack as many wins as they can against that tier 4 and tier 5 teams, because every time they lose one of those games, that means they got to go take one from Kansas, Baylor, West Virginia, or Tech, right? And more than anything, what they need to do is they need to win fucking home games. And like, out of the 16, or at that point, 17 games that were remaining in conference, this Oklahoma game was like the fourth most likely win through Promoroy's probability rankings. So like, losing at home is not an option for them at this point, especially to Kansas State. They have to sweep Kansas State if they're going to have any shot at making the NCAA tournament.
Well, if you're looking at Ken Pomeroy, his statistics and analysis, whatever you want to call it, has Texas at this point going 6-12 in the Big 12.
Yeah, that is his expected win total at this point. So that, and prior to the game, it was 7-11, because Oklahoma, they were expected, I think they were like a 57-60% win probability. So if you're going to construct a path for Texas to make the NCAA tournament, they need to win as many of these games as they possibly can, because it means less games they have to take from teams that to this point in the season are clearly better than them. And so Kansas State becomes, I'm not going to call it a must win, but basically if they lose that game, they might as well start trying to figure out how they're going to make the NIT. Because if they lose to Kansas State at home, this season is going pretty far off the rails.
I think 5 conference wins is more likely than 9.
Well put. Well put. Is that it?
I don't really know that people need me to say anything more than that. That's where I'm at right now.
How about that coach from Villanova?
I will murder 3 hobos to get Jay right here. Like, look, I will personally fund his suit budget if you want, if that's what it takes.
What about the coach from the Celtics? Is that an option for us? What about Red Auerbach? He seems nice.
Was Wooden still alive?
Does he have any grandkids to coach?
Yeah, he doesn't have any grandkids. So, on that note, Shaka Smart on the hot seat again, if you haven't been able to tell from the theme of the show, which is me looking through the top 25 and asking if their coaches are available, was on the hot seat to start the season, kind of. Now he's really on the hot seat. Are y'all still on board the Shaka Smart Express, or are you starting to step off? What's y'all's official stance at this point?
I'm all in, baby. Renew the contract.
How could you step off this train?
Renew the contract. What's going
on
here?
Give him another 10 years.
I
want to
give him
six
more guaranteed years. Yeah. They just add a six more guaranteed years on the end of this.
Where's Steve Patterson and his great decision-making when we need him? Good grief.
All right, so outside of, like, say, Maya Smart, I don't know anybody who could be like, I believe in you. This is right.
This is a great fit. This is the right fit for us and our family.
Like even one of Shaka's kids is probably like, Fordham's pretty good place to sit down and, you know, maybe try this again. It's...
Oh, man.
I mean, I think here's the thing. It's like, I prior to the season, I don't know that I would have said Shaka going into the season was on the hot seat. He's clearly on it now, right? Like, he's absolutely on it now. I think prior to the season, I guess, let's back up a step. The year before and the years before that, there were a lot of financial and other considerations that sort of precluded the on-the-court product from being the determining factor for whether or not Shaka
Thank
stays
you,
around.
Steve Patterson. Man, look, those are great coaching hires.
Well, Steve did what was table stakes at the time, right? Like, you go look at Archie Miller's contract at Indiana, and he's not doing great right now. It's the same shit. It's fully guaranteed for, like, they have to pay out 100% of his contract until, like, 2022, and then they get 50% or something. Like, so it's not far from Shaka's deal, right? That's kind of table stakes. And at the time, everybody wanted Shaka. Well, almost everybody wanted Shaka, right? So,
again. I wanted a Wichita State head coach.
Yeah. Mike Perrin extending him a year caused this to be a bigger problem than it would have otherwise been. So anyway, I think prior to this year, there were factors other than what happened on the court that played a big role in whether or not Shaka would get another year. And there still theoretically could be, right? Like, if CDC thinks Tom Herman's going to shit the bed and he's going to fund that buyout a few months from now, that plays into the calculus. But outside of that sort of thing, is basically if Shaka doesn't win, he's not going to stay around, right? So before the season started, I tried to shift the way I talked about this thing from a should he or shouldn't he get another year to will he or won't he, because I don't think it's I don't think there's as many of those external factors at play. So I mean right now it doesn't look good for him. I'm gonna be honest.
I mean, yeah, Texas has missed the tourney three times, or had missed the tourney three times under Penders and Rick Barnes. They're looking to miss the tournament for the third time in 5 years under Shaka Smart.
Yeah, and that's not the standard that Texas wants, right? And understandably so. Even as much as Rick Barnes sort of warped our idea of how often you should make the tournament, they should still make it more often than not, clearly, right? And they should make some noise on some of the times they do make it, too, to that point. So I think it's valid to bring that up in terms of sort of if you're looking for a job performance or job assessment. I mean, I think at this point there's
but
nobody
else. But he
won
the NIT, and you really can't take that away from him.
Well, you can as soon as you stop paying him. I'm at the point now where, I'm going to be one of the last people to say publicly he should go, because I'm going to wait and make sure that fire is entirely extinguished before I say, well, we're done, right?
So like, that when he has a miraculous comeback, you can be, I told you so.
Well, not even I told you so, but like, if they figure some shit out in the next couple weeks and suddenly go on and go, I don't know, 10-8 conference, make the tournament, win a game or two, then this is sort of a different story we're talking about, right? That's not a likely outcome, but at the same time, it's still a possibility. So until such time as those possibilities start to extinguish themselves, I'm not going to say he should definitely be gone. It's just, I'm also sort of like acknowledging that I completely understand why people want him gone, and I don't have a good counter argument for it. I'm just going to sort of keep my powder dry for now and quietly drink myself to death is
so
basically it.
Tim, you've been kind of quiet on this. Are you still tooting the Shaka horn, or are you kind of taking a look at San Diego State and what they're doing over there, going 15-0 and being number 7 in the nation?
Hey, look, Dutch is my guy. Mm. Dutch is my guy. Anyone who knows the Fab Five as much as I do will know that I love Brian Dutcher.
That's who that is? Cool.
Yep.
All right.
What Johnny
sounds like
says,
a good name at Texas right there.
What Johnny says is right. Look, I'm not going to apologize for thinking that Shaka should be back this year. That this year it was the right call to bring him back. Financially, given what I thought was true about how the lineup would kind of shift and grow without Kerwin and Dylan being around. What I thought he was building before Andrew went down with illness. I think having him here this year made a lot of sense. And I'm not going to apologize for that. But I mean, at this point, I just don't think it's, I don't think you can look at what you see on the floor and think anything other than this is not good enough. And, you know, when they struggle to make the tournament and don't beat Nevada the year that Andrew goes down, okay, well, you've got a little bit of a caveat there. And when, you know, when last year happens with Kerwin being shitty and like him getting suspended and stuff, like, all right, you got a caveat. And the year when, you know, when Northern Iowa, right, you know, even like, would they have been 11-22 if he stayed around? I doubt it. Or when Cameron Ridley goes down or whatever, you know, there's a lot of these, well, but what about this if he had had a full roster? But this year he's got a full roster. And this year his guys are around, and they, like, these are guys that he should have been like developing. And I think they have developed. I mean, guys are better, but like, we're not better. You know, and like Johnny said, it's sports, right? It's sports. And you hear all the time, like, teams have sort of these strange recoveries and they get better at what you might think of as an odd time or a time you wouldn't think it's going to happen. And it does. And maybe we can finally be that team for once. But I sure look at what we see right now and think to myself, we're not good. And because we're not good, Shaka's gone. And I had no qualms about Rick being gone, I comparably would have no qualms about Shaka being gone this year.
When it came to Rick, like, you knew what he was trying to build, right? Like, you had an idea of what he was trying to do. And most of his years, there was an element missing. So you were like, I wanted to see him come up with a team that was his fully realized vision for what he wanted, and then judge him off of that. And that was basically his last year with Miles Turner. That was an experienced team that had a lot of good parts. And he had this one and done that was, like, was sort of the cherry on top that, like, really was going to round out what he wanted. And he failed. And it was like, okay, I have seen enough to see, like, what his sort of fully realized vision is, and it didn't work. And so when we ended last season, I looked at this season as sort of about as close as we could get to that for Shaka, right? Like, he had all his own guys there. He had a lot of guys holding over. There were people coming back, like Andrew and Matt Coleman was going to be coming back, et cetera, right? So, like, this season was supposed to be the, okay, this is your argument for, this is what I'm trying to build. This is what I think this program can be. And it hasn't worked. Like, it's not lived up to what it needs to be. So this season for me is potentially like what Rick Barnes' season last season was for him, where it's like you finally get to see this fully realized vision of what he wants in terms of roster composition and talent, et cetera, et cetera. And so far they haven't met what we needed in terms of wins and losses. So that's kind of where I am on this season for Shaka, and especially because next year it's going to be 90% the same dudes. So
yeah,
you know, like if they get Greg Brown, then I mean, great, but how many sins is he going to cover over, right? Like, so if this ends up being the last season for Shaka, I entirely understand why.
How about that coach from Baylor? How about that coach from Baylor?
Fuck you. Fuck you.
I will murder you and hide you inside that foosball table behind you.
All right. Seems like y'all aren't a fan of that. How about that coach from Texas Tech?
God. Any oop?
No? Not a fan?
Nope.
Not a fan here?
No, thanks. I mean, probably, but no thanks.
It's not a fan. It's, I have multiple questions about how you're going to get him out of Lubbock in the first place that need to be answered before I even consider it a realistic possibility.
Probably in a plane or maybe in a car.
Oh, all right.
I don't
sure.
think
Let's
a boat is on the
then.
Table
okay.
here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you can convince him to get into an RV, I'm sure he would be down, but...
He seems like a dude who would own an RV.
All right.
A Winnebago.
All right. Yeah, but I definitely think maybe helicopter. I forgot. That's another vehicle out there. But boat is off the table.
Yeah, not a lot of rivers between here and Lubbock. So.
Yeah. Maybe that we could the Rio Grande and then to the Gulf and then back up the Colorado.
Just a sailboat with wheels on it.
Look, honestly, if he's willing to take that route, bring him. Like, yeah. He's clearly wants to get to Austin if he's willing to go that circuitous ass route.
All yeah. in.
Ugh. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, is there a chance Shaka Smart doesn't make it through the year? Is there a chance for that oh so cathartic midseason firing that sometimes works? Like, you know, Craig Berube, you know, if y'all don't know that one, just.
We
go ahead.
Google that.
Go ahead and Google it. It was a pretty fun year for me. Or, you know, there's the other the other side of it where you end up going out and getting another coach the next year.
Well, let me ask you this, Will. You're a football guy. Do you think there is a chance, like a universe that exists, where at the end of next football season, Tom Herman is no longer the coach at Texas?
By the end or at the end?
At the end of next football season. Do you think that's true? That
yeah,
there's something
the universe,
there's,
yeah.
Right, right.
He goes 0-12.
I think if he goes like 7-5 again.
Oh no, I mean obviously yeah, if he goes 7-5 he's fired, but also if he goes 0-12 he's fired.
Sure, right. So I don't think 0-12 is ever like I don't know if there's a universe that happens, but I think that it's possible, and because it's possible, I think Shaka will keep his job all year long. If you're looking at what Texas would have to pay in that situation and how much more they would have to pay if they fired Shaka midseason, which I think it is more. Then they're just not going to do it. They'll ride with this shit and say, we're bad. We're going to be bad. Whether he's coaching or his assistants are coaching. I just don't see, unless he steps away, I don't see how that happens. And Shaka's not going to step away. He's not going to fucking turn down the money that he's got coming to him. He shouldn't. That would be really, really stupid.
Maybe if this happens, the next year we go into the season with such low expectations that they are surpassed and people are happy.
Maybe. I think the chances that Shaka is replaced are pretty high right now. I guess I'd put it somewhere like 80 to 85% that he's not the coach next year. That might be that seems about right to me. But because of the uncertainty with the football program, I just don't think that we're going to see Shaka not finish out the season.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Shaka's contract is fully guaranteed. So right now, he's owed, I'm going to say, about $12 million. and at the end of the season, he'll be owed about 10.5, give or take. So that money's getting paid to him regardless, whether it's a lump sum or over the course of the next 15 months as they roll through another season with him. I mean, I guess the only real argument that I have seen for a mid-season firing would be like, well, we're really going to see what this team can do. But the issue is that the problems are on the offensive end, and letting go of, let's say for the sake of argument, they lose to Kansas State this weekend and CDC, you know, flattens all of his tires and tells him to get the hell out of the town while using an Uber or something.
While he's in an Uber.
Yeah, well, yeah. You'd be like, yeah, you can't take your own car. This is our car now. So while you're in it,
fuck you.
Yeah, we're taking this car as part of the collateral against what we owe you. Anyway, so at that point, who are they gonna promote? It's gonna be Yaklich, right? Well, defense has not been the problem. So why would that really help things? I mean, you know, sure, a new voice sometimes helps, but at the same time, he's not going to fix their offensive issues. And so there's not a lot of like upside to a mid-season firing in this particular scenario. So outside of Texas starting conference play like 0-9 or something, I don't see some sort of, you know, mid-season firing happening. It just doesn't seem likely given the hierarchy and the coaching staff.
So let's go ahead and take a look forward here. And think about the potential of the Auburn coach. What do y'all
Drew
think about
Pearl?
Him?
No, thank you.
I mean,
I'm not saying no. I'm just saying you might want to get the lawyers on retainer.
Oregon?
Altman?
Yeah, still.
I would take Altman. There's now you're moving the needle for me a little bit, Will.
I generally like Altman, but there is this whole rape case from a couple years ago that SI talked about extensively where everyone's like, how much did he know? And that does seem like something he might want to answer in a job interview. So
what about that coach from UNC? They're having a bad year. Maybe they could take him away.
I'm fine with it. Yeah, sure. If you can get Roy Williams back in the Big 12, you do it. I don't know if there are enough Texas boosters to pay that salary or pay whatever it needs to take to get him out of North Carolina, but yeah, I'd take Roy.
I mean, Texas is basically trying to become the Ohio State in football. Why not basketball as well? Let's make them really hate us.
Oh, God. Just when it... when there was the Thad Mata shit last year, just like, get out of here. But that's the kind of guy that if we're going to talk kind of frankly here about coaching stuff, when you look at CDC's hires, like a guy like Dana Altman or Leonard Hamilton or Bob Huggins or put in your pretty successful old coach, like that's the kind of guy he's usually targeted. So we'll see what that yields
I'd be fine with Leonard Hamilton, but yeah,
but Hamilton's like 72.
I don't give a shit. I'd be fine.
He's so old.
Like, look, he looks 54. He's basically the dude from The Wire. Like nothing on him is cracked, right? Like he's going to be coached until he's 90, and people are going to still be carding him at liquor stores.
He's going to walk into Jace Febris and be like, you're the biggest... Anyways, never mind. Shouldn't say it.
So what you're saying is the Kentucky coach is off the table. Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't think Texas has the pockets to bring in Calipari, frankly.
Damn.
Like... there, if it was football, yes. But basketball, no. It would be really interesting to see Texas go full, you know, double bird to the NCAA on basketball and be like, go ahead, What are you gonna try and vacate now?
Vacate our NIT championship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please do it. Please vacate that.
No, we've only got two of them. We need to keep 100% of our NIT titles. Look, that 5-game run is the happiest I have been as a Texas fan in years. Okay?
Eat shit, Lipscomb.
I need that one 5 games like series of just joy. And that's like we've wandered the desert for a long time, man. I need my little oasis. Please don't take it from me.
All right. So the easiest 2 games coming up on the schedule are coming up on the schedule with Kansas State and Oklahoma State, especially with Kansas State at home. I mean, what is Texas expecting here against Kansas State and Oklahoma State? What should fans expect? And please, God, tell me they're winning.
So let me give you... So Texas and Kansas State are both in the same boat in that they are 0-2. They are both facing some scheduling problems immediately after this game. Like... Texas' next 3 games after Kansas State are at Oklahoma State, which will not be easy, home against Kansas, and then 48 hours later at West Virginia before the SEC Big 12 thing that happens. So Texas is going to be motivated because otherwise they're looking at the very real possibility of being like 0-6 to start the conference. Well, Kansas State, who is 0-2, after Texas, they get home against Tech, home against West Virginia, and at Kansas, which is currently a 5% win probability for them. So, and then they go to Alabama, and they get Oklahoma at home. Like, Kansas State is really trying not to start the season like 0-8. And so, both teams are going to be motivated for this game, because the negative or sort of the downside of not winning this game is terrifying for both squads.
I feel like this is Baylor versus Kansas like 3 years ago in football, where both teams are just trying not to have the season be a winless season.
Yeah, something like that. Or like when TCU was terrible, they had that 0-18 season and they nearly beat somebody in conference play. I forget who it was, but Trent Johnson was still there. But
oh, yes, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Which, by the way, Trent Johnson, Chris Del Conte hire, so hooray. So it's going to be... Kansas State is basically Texas, but worse. Not so much worse that a loss is out of the realm of possibility, but if Texas loses to Kansas State at home, that shit is going very badly. Like their entire rest of the way, like without question. I mean, really the thing with Kansas State is that they shoot the three worse than Texas does. They shoot free throws worse than Texas does. They shoot almost as many threes as Texas does. Like there's a lot of thematic similarities between Kansas State and Texas, which means that it's going to be like a 50-47 game that nobody's going to leave happy with. That's basically it. As for Oklahoma State, their issues are mostly on the offensive end. They are, believe it or not, significantly worse than Texas at shooting the three. It's hard for a team that has both Lindy Waters and Dezagwa to shoot the three worse than, like, to shoot it at 29% per game, but that's where they are. Likely is the engine that runs that thing. Hopefully Matt Coleman will be able to neutralize him, in which case things get very difficult for Oklahoma State. But I'm not, given that it is at Stillwater and given what happened last year when we thought they would throttle Oklahoma State at Stillwater, I'm not predicting a win there. Like, there's no way. If Texas goes 2 of 23 from three again in Stillwater, then that's anybody's game. Look, man, if you're still here listening with us, congratulations. We feel like we owe you some sort of gift card. But
you're not getting that.
Do you like Colts?
No. Yeah, no, we don't make enough money off this podcast for gift cards or I don't know, headphones, anything. I hope Texas wins both of them. I'm going to shit in one hand and wish in the other and see which fills up first.
Maybe the shit hand.
That's a saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, shit in one hand and wish in the other and see which fills
add
up
that
first.
That one
yeah.
to my binder.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Tim, what do you think? There what you are go. Your expectations for this next week?
Well, Johnny was very eloquent in that. Nice job, Johnny. So my quick 2 cents Thank on you. Both games, Kansas State does a really good job of turning the ball over on defense. That does not bode well for us.
That's true.
And as bad as Oklahoma State has been shooting from three against everyone else, they always shoot well against us, particularly at home, whether it's Keaton Page, that little piece of shit, going for like 44 against us or whatever, or Lindy Waters being 5 of 5 either last year or 2 years ago. Like whatever they shot, double it, that will be their percentage against us, because that's just sort of what it's been. Right. I mean, whatever. Whatever. Be cool to win. That'd be great to win them both. And I think we should be...
I'm fine with some sort of, like, was it last Boy Scout situation where somebody just shoots DeZagua before he even gets on the court. Like, I don't want to kill him. I just want him to not make the game.
I would still take someone shooting Keaton Page.
Yeah, it's true. To this day, that's
that.
Fair.
Fuck that guy. So, I don't know. Whatever. Right? I mean, it's whatever, Will. Nothing means anything, as Johnny likes to say, so.
That should be the new name of this show, is it's whatever, Will.
I'm just surprised that this team has made Tim the nihilist of the podcast.
I hate it. I despise it. I'm so depressed. You make me sad.
Tim, is that frustrating?
It is. Will. It is frustrating.
No, you're not even going to help me out here? Just too depressed to even try for old time's sake?
Well, I went, so there's a place here in Iowa called Orange Leaf.
You want a
pretty
frustrating? Is that what you're asking
for? That's kind of what I'm asking for here.
Okay, hey, do you guys have orange leaves there in Texas?
Oranges.
It's a yogurt place where you can get yogurt and then like put on whatever toppings. And it was incredible. They have chocolate covered pretzels. So like that's my very favorite snack is chocolate covered pretzels. Just delicious. So I got the cookies and cream yogurt, of course. And got a bunch of chocolate-covered pretzels on top of it, of course. Incredible. But halfway through, like, I kind of started, like, burping, like, oh, my gosh. Is this heartburn? Am I having a heart attack? What's going on? And I just burped, and it was fine. And there was a part of me that was like, you know, that sweet release of death right now would be pretty decent. And I didn't die. I lived through it. So that was... Can watch the next Texas basketball game. You know, I see my kids graduate and stuff like that, but... Death would have been pretty sweet at that moment as well. So, very frustrating.
If there was one argument for this to be a Twitch stream, it would be so that we could watch Will's expression when he knows he's getting a frustrating story out of Tim. Like, he's like a frustrating story sommelier just sitting there just sort of really just like he's swirling it around in front of him. He's getting all the high notes.
Ooh, this one's self-deprecating.
I can feel the pain in this one. Oh, yes.
Blur.
Hints of sadness.
Yeah, and yeah. Jeez. Criminy.
So I guess that's sad. A good way to lead us right into pretend you're getting to know us, because I don't feel like there's much more to say about Kansas State and Oklahoma State except for don't lose.
See you at 0-4, boys. Talk to you guys when we're 0-4.
Let's not talk about this team, and let's start talking about pretend you're getting to know us with what is the worst restaurant that y'all have been to ever?
Well, this is kind of the I've been precursed by myself off the air, everybody, so sorry about that. Not great listening, but... So I went to with my family over the holidays. My sister and her triplet daughters are vegan, which seems terrible. And so my parents, being the thoughtful people that they are, they try really hard all the time to find places that like that my sister and the girls can go to and eat. And so we went to a Mediterranean place in Iowa City, which was not good. But you know, knowing that like I'm not particularly adventurous with my food choices, I love gyros. We went there, and it was absolutely the worst gyro I've ever tasted. Maybe arguably the worst sandwich-like thing I've ever tasted. You know, not that a gyro is necessarily a sandwich. I guess I don't know for sure. Like, is a hot dog a sandwich? Is a gyro a sandwich? It was fucking garbage. It was, like, the meat was bad. The tzatziki was okay, but even that, like, couldn't make up for it. The pita was dry as balls. Like, it just was awful. It was really, really, really terrible. And I think, like, of all the things in the world that you can't fuck up, a gyro should be one of those things. Like, it's quite easy to make that. And it was so bad I didn't finish it. And it was very, it was clear on my face. Like, I just, it was, my face was very angry and sad and disappointed. And Texas basketball is not good. And Shaka's just,
So, Tim, have you ever heard of the cube rule when it comes to food?
The cube rule?
Yeah, where there's six ways to identify a dish based on the starch locations. One is toast, where there's just a bottom layer. Sandwich is where there's a top and a bottom. Taco is where there's three, a bottom and two sides. Sushi is where there's a bottom, a top, and two sides. A soup or salad bowl is where it has...
five sides?
Five sides, and then a calzone is the six sides. That's the cube rule for food.
Okay.
I just really like that Tim pulled out that five sides out of the middle. And, like, it's like he's over there doing a beautiful mind calculations.
Yeah.
He just went, oh, what is this? Five sides. And like, yes, that's bread bowl. Okay.
I love, love bread bowls. Delicious.
Well, you are from Iowa.
Well, what's the kind of bread? What is that bread? Sourdough?
And then everything else beyond that is a salad. So that means that steak is a salad, mashed potatoes are a salad, fried rice is a salad, spaghetti, poutine, soup. Soup is a wet salad.
just a stick of butter salad.
Yeah.
You so like let's say we'll start off with what toast is. Pizza is a toast. Nigiri is a toast. Like a slice of pumpkin pie is a toast. A sandwich is like lasagna or toasts with bread in between. You know, two pieces of bread with a piece of bread in between, as long as the bread's different.
So a hot dog is a taco?
It's just a stack of bread. What's up?
A hot dog is a taco?
Yeah, it has a bottom and two sides. Yeah. But a quesadilla is a sandwich.
Ooh.
If you cut it. The correct way. It's a sandwich. Now a taco, like a slice of pie, a hot dog, Subway sub sandwich with that's uncut, not cut all the way through.
The quesadilla it has three sides though, right? It's got the top, the bottom, and then the where you fold it.
Well, we're talking about like a cut quesadilla. Like let's say you go to a restaurant and they cut it, right?
Three. Okay. They didn't fold it. They just put two tortillas, one on top of the other.
Well, that or they folded it and then they did it in like the pizza slices, but enough so that it doesn't. There's not layer there. There's like maybe one of them's a taco, but the other two are sandwiches.
Okay.
Is it pico or more of like a enchilada sauce on the side?
I don't think that does anything. But like falafel wrap is a sushi. Pigs in a blanket is a sushi.
Condiments don't fucking matter, Tim. God damn it.
They enchilada do to me, is a sushi. Johnny. They do to me.
They don't change the cube rule, man.
Yeah, you know, the quiche is a salad. Like the salad in a bread bowl, that's a quiche. Key lime pie, deep dish pizza is a quiche. Ooh. And then a calzone, like, you know, a ravioli is a calzone, a corn dog pie, burrito.
You guys have heard my I got
Pop-tarts?
High joke before,
Pop-tarts
right?
Pop-tarts are a calzone.
My story. So there's a college in Iowa called Grinnell. Have I told you this story before? So yeah,
we got time.
I had a really good friend in college. Like I don't think this is gonna get me in trouble. I don't think so. Hopefully not. No one listens to this fucking podcast anyway. And I had a really good friend in high school and then in college. He went to a place called Grinnell. Grinnell is pretty easily the highest academic institution. You've probably heard of Grinnell, I'd assume, Will, if you've heard of Wash U.
Yeah, I know Grinnell. We played them, I think, in lacrosse maybe once or twice.
Yeah,
they're like the Griffins. Is that what they are?
The Pioneers, they're called, it doesn't matter. Whatever. Anyways, so the thing with Grinnell is the drug use is absolutely rampant. Just rampant.
Schools.
I'm allergic to smoke, so I can't smoke cigarettes or like pot or whatever else, so I just never do it. I think I'd like it if I could, but I just don't. But I have smoked pot twice. The first time, my freshman year of college, and like I am
buying you a plane ticket to Denver, and I'm meeting you there. And we're going to go get gummies.
And I felt nothing. Like, I didn't feel anything when I smoked pot that first time. And then the second time was at Grinnell with my good friend. And like, they had this huge bong. It was, like, 3 feet high. And it was round like a – it was round. Like
Charles Oakley's penis.
And like, two-thirds of the way up, there was this line – And the guy, like, who obviously the guy had a bunch of Frisbees, and so obviously smoked a shit ton of pot. And he's like, don't go beyond the line, dude. Don't go beyond the line when you take a hit. Don't do that. I was like, all right, sounds good. I won't. But I didn't know what I was doing because I don't smoke pot. So it went way beyond the line. Like, all the way. He's like, dude, take your finger off or whatever. So I was like, oh, guys. So I took it. I couldn't talk for weeks afterwards, but I
feel like that is everybody's first. For me, the first time I smoked pot was through a bong, and it was a big bong they called Saruman, because you looked like you had a white beard. And I'm
not surprised that you had some Dungeons and Dragons, Lord of the Rings shit happening the first time you got high.
But anyways, milked that. And was done. Was done for the rest of the day, done for the night, just out. There's more to that story, but for another podcast. Johnny, worst restaurant.
So I was so hungry. I was so hungry that I was like, what food do you have? And the dude's like, I've got this really old bag of Rod pretzels. I was like, yes! So I ate them, and they were the most incredible things ever. And so here's where it comes back to the real part of the story, Will. That was when the Pizza Hut Pizzone had just come out. So I ordered a Pizza Hut Pizzone, and it got delivered. And then I ordered another one and had that one delivered too. And it was incredible. Incredible. So that's my pot story. Hope you enjoyed it.
We should have saved that for another. Pretend you're getting to know us. What's your favorite pot story? Johnny would have... quite a few to choose from if he can remember them. Johnny, do you remember your worst restaurant ever?
No, fuck it. We're ending on that.
We're ending on that?
Like, that's... Look, his... Okay, we got Tim talking about shitty heroes. We got him talking about multiple times he's tried to get high. He got him talking about various foods he's had delivered while high. Like... Look, my story about Big Tex and Amarillo being shitty as hell is not going to even – it's going to pale in comparison to what just happened.
Mine was
going to
piss off people. I was going to say Hutt's Hamburgers in Austin was one of the worst meals I've ever had.
At one point, I started swaying back and forth.
It's been pretty mediocre for a long time.
And I couldn't stop swaying. And I started giggling like, I can't stop swaying. I just can't stop moving. And I was just giggling like a little kid. It was incredible. Eating Rod pretzels. Is great.
Yep. We're done. This is good. This is perfect.
Cool. Thank y'all for pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
You can find me on the Pretend We're Football podcast. It's available on Spotify and Podbean. I don't know what you're talking about. anywhere you get your podcast, that's available there. Also on Twitter at BitterWhiteGuy and BarkingCarnival.com. I am there going through my own personal therapy sessions in each recap.
And on the radio, where he forgets that we exist every time he joins that show.
I gotta text them. Actually, I'm gonna text Kevin right now about that, because I don't know if it's like kosher for me to bring up another podcast, because I know he's got a podcast, I don't know. Anyway, I'm gonna ask about that.
Okay, cool. Just, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I have no defense. I'll go check it out.
He just hates us, folks. Tim.
They're just specifically you.
But Johnny, you know how you can make it up to me?
Oh, yeah?
Can you tell me where in the world is Mr. Timothy Preston?
So Tim is actually currently vetting counselors for a couples therapy session. I don't know if you're aware of this. The last few months have not been great. There have been some very down times. A lot of miscommunication.
The soybeans aren't doing quite well.
Really, what it is that Tim and I have just not been getting along the way we should. It was a great relationship for years on end, but I mean, as you can imagine, he and I are both into some really kinky shit. Like, there's no pee, there's no, like, golden showers, there's no pooping, like, it's nothing like that. But Tim is clearly the dominant person in this relationship. Like, I'm the submissive, and, you know, I every time he looks at me and just gets that sort of power move in his eyes, it's amazing. But lately, it's been sort of perfunctory. Like, we haven't really had the same sort of spark we've had in previous months and years and years and years. And the problem is that his safe word is shocker. And ever since the last week or so, every time I hear that name, I start punching things. And that's not what a good submissive does, but I can't help it. And we got to work that out, man. Because, like, I'm here for the long haul for him. He's here for the long haul for me. And it means a lot to us. So his copay is better than mine. So this is really, really why he's picking. Like, honestly, the healthcare prices are better in Iowa, if I'm honest. So, yeah, we're gonna try and hash this out, because we believe in each other, and this is for the long haul.
No, don't stop. Keep going. We're getting to the best part of the song. I love this song. I guess I'll stop. Sounds great.
God damn it.
This show is off the rails. It's so far off the rails. Oh, Tim, just tell me where we can find you if we can end this.
InsideTexas.com, great community. And Twitter, InsideTexasHoop, no S.
Oh, okay. Basketball court things?
Perimeter, inside with the big boys, right in your fucking face. Comfortable.
Oh, all right. Thank y'all for listening. Johnny told you where you can find us. This is the Horns Cast. And we'll see y'all next week.
You get.
Hook 'em.
Hook 'em. This is what you get. This is what you get when you mess with. Wait for it. Wait. Here it is.